normalization group in curved space-time.
Yeah, thank you. I'm going to start the talk saying that in parallel to yesterday's seminar, I want to ask everyone to leave his string theory. As this is going to be a quantum field theory talk. And now, causal diamonds will also play a certain role, but we'll come to that later. So, and I will try to get it done in an hour. So. Okay, so I'm going to talk about the PCT theorem. There's and the renormalization group. They are not meaning to connect the two, but really talk about, you know, what they're supposed to mean and whether they're true in a generic field theory in curved space-time. So, I should say, this work is the work on the PCT that's a work of mine. It can be found in the archives, and the work on the renormalization group is. That was done together with Bob Ward and can be found there. Okay, so just a brief introduction, recalling some facts that you're probably aware of, but you know, I want to just emphasize them again. So quantum field theory in Minkowski space-time is usually heavily based on concepts following concepts and also techniques. So there is obviously the theories usually have a particle interpretation, which actually gave the name to the subject, because people doing this stuff call themselves particle physicists. There's obviously has to do with Poincaré symmetry. So that is the symmetry of Minkowski space-time. The Poincaré symmetry, if you have Poincaré symmetry, you can define a global Hamiltonian, and then the stability of the theory is expressed as the fact that the Hamiltonian operator generating the time translations better have positive spectrum in any Lorentz frame you might choose. There's a very popular S matrix formalism, which is, of course, very relevant to people doing scattering experiments, as the S suggests. There is a Hilbert space, although Hilbert spaces have sort of come out of fashion a little bit, but there is behind everything a Hilbert space with a built upon a unique Poincaré invariant vacuum state. And then, not really fundamental, but nevertheless important technically, is that there are momentum, people often like to use momentum space techniques, that is, they like to work in Fourier space rather than position space. That's often has a lot of advantages. And people also like to use Euclidean methods, that is, they like to make use of the fact that Minkowski space is in fact a Lorentzian section of complexified Minkowski space, and that complexified Minkowski space also has a real Euclidean section, and you can nicely reformulate the field theory on that Euclidean section and get something that looks very much like what you look at in statistical mechanics. And sort of the key words are sort of the Euclidean path integral, which is very nice and elegant, and also some techniques like dimensional regularization, effective action, and so forth. So the way I've described this, I think, should make it clear to you that none of these techniques are really, or concepts are really available in a curved space-time. I should say generic curved space-time, because there are lots of special curves, certain special curved space-time where you still have some parts of this list. But I'm interested in really generic space-times without any symmetries, without any asymptotically flat in or out regions, or with, you know, and therefore they also therefore do not have any Euclidean, real Euclidean sections. So that's my sort of. So really what this forces you to do is to emphasize the local behavior of the quantum fields, and I think this term, I think what John should have in mind is due to Werner Heisenberg, who called it the Nahwirkungsprinzip, so the principle of locality, I think is the proper translation. And one, in Curve Space Time, one should not emphasize global concepts such as a preferred vacuum state, which in general doesn't exist, or things like an S-matrix or other global concepts. So the question then arises which basic structures one is familiar with, and results in Minkowski space-time generalized to this new setting. And in this talk, I'm going to talk about the PCT theorem, and more precisely, I'm going to show the PCT invariance of the operator product expansion, really. And I'm also going to talk about the renormalization group, and these are the two sort of things I want to focus on. There are others. I won't have time to talk about that. So let's do the start with the PCT theorem. So just to put us all on the same page, quantum field theories in Minkowski space-time have a symmetry under simultaneous reversal of parity. So vector x goes to minus x, time t goes to minus t, and charge, some local field observable O going to its charge conjugate, in the sense that the vacuum correlation functions of the theory have this invariance. So I change the fields to their conjugates, charge conjugates, and I flip P and T, and then the following invariance property holds. And this can also be restated by saying there is a PCT operator acting on the Hilbert space, which transforms the fields to the charge conjugated fields with the space-time argument going to minus that argument, and which leaves the vacuum state invariant, and which sort of maps an in-state wave function, an incoming wave function, to the charge conjugate of the corresponding out wave function. Okay. So what I want to think about is how one can formulate a PCT theorem in generic curve space-time. So really whether that is expected to be true, and if so, in what sense. So the problems are, obviously, that a generic curve space-time, which I call M for the manifold and GIB for the metric, that simply does not have any symmetries, or isometries, technically speaking, that are analogous to P and T in Minkowski space-time. That's problem number one. Problem number two is that there is no analog of the. You see, the PCT theorem was formulated in terms of the vacuum correlation functions, and there simply is no such thing as a vacuum. There are many states, and one certainly does not expect any particular nice transformation behavior for some randomly chosen or arbitrary off-the-shelf quantum state C. Oops, got entangled. So, also the theory does not have a, I've already said, that has not a, usually does not have a interpretation in terms of particles, so there isn't an analog of an in-state wave function and things like that. So I need a different formulation. That's sort of the point I want to make here. So what's my approach? So if you talk to a general relativist, he's going to tell you, so why do you want to put some arbitrary coordinates, x of the manifold to minus x? What you should really be doing is to consider the space-time not only as being equipped with a metric, but also with an orientation, that is some four-dimensional integration element, so some skew tensor epsilon ABCD, and some time orientation, which is just given by some function t, which increases in the future. So wherever in the direction in which this t increases, you say is the future. So that defines what you mean by future and past in the space-time, and sort of the orientations then correspond, you know, mathematically correspond to the specification of this integration element, or really just its overall sign, so, and sort of a choice of time function. Of course, which particular time function you choose is not so important. It's just sort of the direction, you know, what you identify with future and what you identify with past is the important thing. Okay, so the point is that in Minkowski space-time, the flip, you know, O going to this minus O with the same volume or sort of skew tensor, but minus the time function, so the opposite notion of future and past, can actually be implemented by a coordinate transformation, by that coordinate transformation, and that coordinate transformation is also an isometry of the space-time. But in general, I cannot implement this change by an isometry of the space-time. So the notion of P and T that I think is appropriate in curved space-time is just really changing the orientations of the space-time and forgetting about any point transformations that may implement them.
So doing a time reversal all by itself would be letting both epsilon and T go to minus epsilon, and parroting change epsilon.
Right. And the other thing, the other ingredient in the Minkowski formulation were the correlation functions. So the correlation function in the vacuum state. So I've already said there isn't a vacuum state, but you can get around this by formulating the theory not via the correlation functions, but directly in terms of the interacting quantum field operators rather than their expectation values and their sort of algebraic relations, but so such as commutation relations, operator product expansion, and so forth. And then it's natural to say that the theory is PCT theorem, is PCT invariant, if the algebraic relations between the field operators are preserved under changing the orientations to in this way, yeah?
What happens if the space-time has post-time like curves?
Oh, I should say, I'm only working with space-times that are nice in that they are globally hyperbolic, so the strongest version of nice space-times.
With PCP in such space-times?
I think there's not a really very well-defined notion of field theory in this space. We can talk about this afterwards. I think already formulating the field theory gets you in trouble. And I think whether that is then PCT invariant is kind of a second level.
It can still be time and space orientable even if you have
post-time. Oh, yeah, no, it can be time and space orientable. But as I'm saying, if the theory classically does not have a sort of well-posed initial value formulation, which you need sort of in order to quantize, so morally speaking. So by initial value formulation, I mean you specify data on a spatial slice, and that determines the whole solution. If you don't have that, you have trouble formulating the quantum field theory.
What goes wrong? I mean, if you have a true, for example, or just this Minkowski space identifier?
Well, I think we can discuss. I think it will kind of.
Fields have to be
curved. Right, but you get sort of, we can discuss, I mean, it's an interesting question to formulate field theories in these spaces, but I don't think it's sort of very. Okay, so I've said this in words, so I should tell you what I mean by sort of this formulation of quantum field theory that only relies on the algebraic relations of the quantum fields. So this slide is going to be some abstract blah blah. So for people who don't like this style of mathematical physics, they should wait a little bit so it will get a bit more concrete. But I'm just stating here a general framework. I'm not talking about a particular model. So I'm just stating here what I actually mean what sort of my general framework is for quantum field theory in chaos space-time. So, as I said, my quantum field theory lives on a curved space-time MGAB, but I also view now the theory as depending on the orientations, which is very natural already classically if you want to define spinners in curved space. Well, not only curved space, if you want to define spinners, their definition really depends on a choice of orientations. Yeah. So this is the data that my quantum field theory depends on. And what a quantum field theory then is, very, very abstractly, is just an assignment of space-times with the non-commutative algebras generated by the smeared quantum fields. So I denote these by A, and they depend on this curly M, which sort of represents these data, which I don't want to write out every time. And really, technically, they depend on the smeared quantum fields, but that's sort of a technical point. So the dynamical content of the theory is then encoded in this view, is then encoded in the relations of this algebra, that is, field equations satisfied by the field, or commutation relations, or more general operator product expansions, and sort of whatever you can think of in this regard. So what do I mean by locality and covariance, or general covariance, in the setup? Is just simply the following. You look at this picture where the first, where a diamond appears. So suppose I have a little patch of space-time, and I view that which is embedded into a larger space-time. So simply, I have a large space-time in which there's some little patch, and I can view that, regard that little patch as a space-time in its own right. Okay, so it's a causally complete patch, so that's why it's sort of this diamond shape. And so in this situation...
Sorry, what does causally complete mean? It's the feature embedded of some partial coefficient?
Yeah. It means it's simply a space-time in its own right. Yeah. So if you have every, it's globally hyperbolic. I mean, really. So every geodesic, every timeline, every causal geodesic hits a Cauchy surface, and that would be that Cauchy surface going. Yeah. Okay. So the locality of the theory is really expressed as, so I have some fields living here in this space-time, which I regard as a space-time in its own right. And then I have some field theory in this bigger space-time. And the point is that I postulate that I can naturally regard the field algebra associated with this smaller space-time as a sub-algebra of this larger space-time. That is, really, intuitively speaking, sort of the relations between the quantum fields living in this small patch of the space-time don't care what the space-time looks in the causal complement. So the sort of, say, the operator product expansion in this little region is independent of sort of what the metric does out here. So this is sort of some abstract, just a mathematical statement of that. So that's my general view. That's sort of, if you want, an axiom. So that's a property that I want to be true for every quantum field theory. And it sounds like a trivial axiom, but it's actually not so trivial if you think about it in perturbation theory. So I also want to demand that under this identification of sort of the algebra with the smaller space-time and the algebra in the larger space-time, so the local fields are just mapped into each other. Yeah, so the local fields have the obvious transformation property. So just as an example, if I take both space-times to be Minkowski space, and I take this embedding chi to be a proper orthochronous Lorentz transformation, it has to be proper and orthochronous because I want it to be orientation preserving, so I only restrict attention to orientation preserving maps, then the alpha chi is simply sort of the operation of sandwiching this object between the unitaries implementing the symmetries on the Hilbert space. So that's the usual transformation behavior of the relativistic quantum fields in Minkowski space-time in page 3 on every book. Okay, so that's just a special case, so just to give you the flavor what does this really mean. So now what is the PCT theorem supposed to say? So before I restricted attention to orientation preserving maps, so the statement of the PCT theorem then is, look, if I look at the space-time M bar, which has the same metric, so the same manifold as the original space-time, the same metric, but the PT reversed orientation, so that's what the bar corresponds to, then the algebraic relations are exactly the same. Yeah, so they don't depend on they are invariant under P and T in the sense of changing the orientations.
Where did C come in?
So C is how if you look at what this map, so to speak, would do to a field or a local field, then that field would be mapped to the charge conjugate field.
The isomorphisms, not very
important. Yeah. So they a priori they have nothing to do with each other. Yeah. So a priori, as in Minkowski space, you demand the transformation property under orientation preserving Poincaré guys, and that they also have this invariance under orientation, non sort of maps that flip the orientation is a non-trivial that does not follow from anything. It is not obvious a priori. Yeah, so that's why it's called a theorem rather than some, you know, whatever assumption or what, I don't know. Yeah, so here would be the desired transformation property of the of a field, and so the question, and so in Minkowski space-time, then this map little theta would just be the operation of sandwiching something between the PCT operator. Yeah, so if I sandwich this field between the PCT operator, then that would represent the action of this theta. So it's true, in other words, in Minkowski space-time. But the question is really, is it really true in curved space? So. Yeah. So my question is, does it actually hold? So I've sort of given a nice formulation, but the question is, of course, does it hold? And sort of in Minkowski space-time, one can prove the PCT theorem, as I've already said. So this has been done by various people, Streeter, Whiteman, Yost, I don't know, Pauli, I don't know who, really, probably lots of people had relevant ideas. But it's a theorem and therefore depends on assumptions. So assumptions should obviously be more fundamental or basic, or otherwise, you know, it's not a good theorem. And so the assumptions that go into the usual proof is the spectrum condition. So the statement that in Minkowski space-time, yeah, the statement that the Hamiltonian of the theory, or really the four momentum operator, always has positive spectrum. And the other crucial thing that goes in is that there exists a translationally invariant vacuum state. Yeah, so these are the two things that go in.
They don't have to assume Poincaré invariants?
No, sorry, it has to be Poincaré invariant, actually. That's right. Yes.
Sorry, what does the action that was
on? Oh, no, the correlation function. So in the Whiteman, for example, in the Whiteman approach, you write down the correlation functions, and you don't know what it's supposed to be, a model independent statement. So you don't know what the very complicated functions, so you make some basic assumptions.
But and the some assumption that
we're calculating. Yeah, although you can kind of get around this sort of this.
I mean the proof, if I recall.
Yeah, the standard proof requires also, look, you can get around that a little. You can weaken that to sort of almost locality. We can.
You can weaken it, but at some point you need to.
Yeah.
The proof relies on using analyticity.
Right? Yeah. Well, I come to. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you're right. I should have. Yeah. So I guess that's an unfair representation of the assumptions.
The most important one is the locality.
Well, we can discuss that. Yeah. Okay. So. I've been unfair, and so another assumption. Well, the locality in the sense that the fields commute or anti-commute at space-like distances. That's what's meant by locality.
But is that a cluster?
No.
That's a space. That's just the space. A cluster decomposition was just the fact that you can actually expand it in terms of creation and annihilation.
Oh, it has nothing to do with creation and annihilation operators. Nothing to do with it. Okay, so now I'm interested in the curved space version of PCT that I've sort of described to you, and I want to prove a theorem, so clearly I have to make some assumptions, and the assumptions I'm going to make, I'll do that hoping that you review them as more fundamental than the result I want to get out, so otherwise it's not a very interesting talk, but I do think they are more fundamental. So one assumption, so locality is going to be one assumption that which I have omitted, which I think is so...
locality, you could rephrase locality instead of the usual, commuted and space-like separations in terms of the operator product expansion.
Right, I have sort of given you a short version of everything. So if I sort of tell you what my grand scheme of axioms is, sort of this will definitely be there. So for time reason, so the really thing I want to, that however would be very similar to Minkowski space-time. Yeah, so there is a notion of this, also curved space-time have a causal structure, obviously, and there's really any difference. But the thing that is different, I've already said, there is no four momentum operator, but I'm going to replace that by something I call the micro-local spectrum condition, which is some covariant version of the spectrum condition that I'm going to describe to you in just a second. And obviously there is no translation invariant vacuum state, or Poincaré invariant vacuum state, really, I should say. And so it's not so clear what to replace that with. So the choice that I have made is to assume that the theory, and I think that is probably would be readily accepted by most field theorists, that the theory really does have an operator product expansion, and moreover that operator product expansion is locally constructed out of the metric, which sort of which just reflects the fact that these algebras A of M really only depend on the local geometry of the space-time. Yeah, so these are my two assumptions, and what I will prove then is the PCT invariance of the operator product expansion. So that's my result.
So when you say the operator product expansion only depends on the metric locally, you mean only on some finite number of derivatives?
Oh, yeah, let me just, I have one more transparency explaining this claim in a little bit more detail, yeah? So what is the operator product expansion? So the statement is basically I take two local fields on my space-time manifold, and the statement is that somehow or other I can expand it in terms of singly localized fields, so just a field here, so it's a big sum which goes over, in general, all species of fields, so the little I is just a label that labels the different species of fields, and there are some things that one could think of as structure constants, so these are coefficient, C number coefficient functions that sort of depend on the points x1 and x2, and the expansion is performed around some reference point. And the statement of locality is that if, again, I consider a space-time that it sits inside a bigger space-time, then the coefficient associated with that smaller patch only knows about the geometry in the patch. Yeah? So it does. So for example, it's a very strong assumption. So for example, if I have a patch, the coefficients don't depend, say, on the global topology of the space-time. So the global topology would have an influence on the sort of structure of the instanton spaces and all that. And my statement is it doesn't depend on that, yeah? Okay, so then on the space-time M bar with the opposite orientation, I'm then supposed to be given also coefficients just associated with the space-time with that opposite orientation, and the statement of the invariance of the operator product expansion under C, P, and T is the statement that these coefficients on the spacetime with the opposite orientations are not completely independent of on the one with the original spacetime orientation, but they're just the complex conjugates of those, yeah?
So, is there an assumption that y and x1 and x2 are all very close?
Yeah. So there is, of course, the issue of what this equality sign really means. Yeah. So this is certainly.
I understood that one.
Oh, which one didn't you understand? Okay. So if you Yeah, so it's an asymptotic, it's not a convergent expansion. So I think one cannot expect that it's a convergent. Yeah, it's in sort of, if one sort of looks at the difference between the left side and sort of a partial sum on the right side, so I carry it out to very high order and look at the difference, then the scaling of that, the scaling of that sort of the difference sort of goes to zero as rapidly as you wish, as x goes to x1, x1 goes to x2, yeah, as the difference of the point.
And y also goes the same.
Yeah, and y is the reference point.
But these coefficients in principle depend on y as well.
Right, I have not, I didn't want to write too many, I mean, it's already a very messy transparency, so.
Occasionally, instantons
do contribute to operator product. Yeah, so that's a subtle, we can talk about that. Certainly not in the way I look at it, but. It's okay. So this is sort of, I just stated what the operator product expansion was, how the PCT property relates, so how the PCT property is expressed as a property of the coefficients in the operator product expansion. And now I'm going to explain to you my second very important assumption, which is sort of this covariant version of the spectrum condition that I mentioned. And so really this is sort of a very technical actually to, so it's not very nice mathematics, but being very nice mathematics, unfortunately not so easy to explain in on one transparency. But the point is the following. So this coefficient C, I dropped the label, they are function or distributions of this difference of the points, yeah? So they're singular distribution. So the condition sort of that I want to impose and that I claim has to do with really the spectrum condition, although that's not the least bit obvious in what I'm going to say, but just to ask you to believe that, is that the singularity structure of these C's should not just be arbitrary, but should reflect sort of the positive frequency nature of the field. Yeah? So this is sort of a vague statement, but there is a precise mathematical version of the statement, namely which goes by the concept of the wavefront set of a distribution, which it.
What do you mean by positive frequency here?
Right, that's what I'm trying to explain. Okay. So there is some invariant that you can associate with any distribution whatsoever, called the wavefront set, which is always a subset, technically, of the cotangent space of the configuration space of the distribution. So in my case, C was a coefficient in the operator product expansion, so it depended on two space-time points where the fields lived, and so my configuration space is M cross M, so X1 belongs to this copy of M and X2 is associated with that copy of M. So the statement about the singularity structure of the C is really precisely what subset this is, yeah? And so the restricting statement is, so the subset, so it's a thing in the cotangent space, so an element will correspond of an X1, the associated covector living at X1 and X2, and the associated covector at X2. And I claim the wavefront, I postulate the wavefront set consists only of those guys which can arise from Feynman diagrams in the following sense. So I write down my points X1 and X2 in the manifold. So here's X1, here's X2. the future time is going up the slide. And then I draw all possible Feynman diagrams between these points. Yeah? So this I've just written down one example, but I could have written down an arbitrary complicated Feynman diagram, possibly with internal vertices.
And all possible means without any assumptions about the action or where these things come from.
Right, so I don't. Right, it's so sort of some abstract. I have not written down a Lagrangian for you. So my requirement is that these lines are just time-like curves in the manifold, yeah? And now I want to make a restrictive assumption, a restrictive statement about this case, yeah? So, and this arises as follows. I draw these Feynman diagrams. I decorate each curve with a coparallel vector field, whichever one I like. It's just coparallel, so this one is like so, this one is like so, this one goes like so. The only point is that they have to be future pointing, yeah? So the future pointing, the property of them, future pointing respects the positive frequency nature. And that's very abstract, but it really does, if you look in sort of perturbation theory, what these things mean. Okay, and then the statement is that the K1 should simply be the sum of the covectors, the sum of the covectors down here, and K2 should be the sum of the covectors down here. So K1 is the sum of the outgoing momenta, and K2 is minus the sum of the ingoing momenta. Yeah, so minus because it's ingoing. Yeah. And so I could write down many other Feynman graphs and many other K1s and K2 out in an outgoing momenta configurations arising from this procedure. They all would be in this wavefront set. But no more, yeah? So my condition is there are no more guys in the wavefront set.
So you said the word, which you mean coparallel. By which you mean, what does coparallel mean?
But just the
parallel-propagated or?
Yeah, parallel, it's a co-vector, so the corresponding vector is parallel, and if you lower the index with the metric, if you raise the index with the metric, then it's parallel.
So if I fix the thing down the bottom, I know what it is.
Right.
Is there a way to understand this from the point of view of the path integral defined within this time?
No, there is no path integral in curved space time.
There's no path integral in curved space time?
Well, you can formally write it down. But, okay. So, well, maybe I shouldn't be so. Okay, so this is my, as I've described to you, my assumption, on the technical level. And now I just very briefly outline to you, how much more time do I have?
Well, this assumption
about 20 minutes.
Okay.
Also contains a locality assumption.
No, that assumption does not contain a locality.
It has an I epsilon.
It contains to the, it is very closely related to the I epsilon prescription.
But then why doesn't that contain that? Guarantee a kind of locality?
No, that in itself does not guarantee a locality. Well, we can that assumption in itself does not guarantee the sign of the plus or minus I epsilon. Or the micro local spectrum condition does not imply the locality of the theory. Right? But it's, as I'm going to explain, this.
You have to assume that as well.
Yeah, I assume the locality of the quantum field theory. It's just that the commutator of the fields vanish at space-like separations, and consequently the anti-symmetric part of the coefficient in the operator product expansion vanishes at space-like separation.
So what you were discussing here, your condition is only on the points that
were
time-like separated.
Right. Okay. Okay, so now I'm just going to sketch the proof. So you mentioned the epsilon prescription. That's actually an important ingredient. So the first step, so I want to show something about these coefficients C, and I really want to show that they're PCT invariant. So the first thing I do, I show that I can always expand them in a sum of Minkowski space-time guys, where the Minkowski space is identified with the tangent space of my reference point times local curvature polynomials. Yeah, so the dimension of the local curvature polynomials increases, and sort of the scaling dimensions of these guys decreases. Yeah. So the zeroth term is the Minkowski contribution, and the next term would have sort of a curvature here. That's the first correction, and then but then infinitely many guys. And then one can show that my claimed invariance of the C is under the change of orientations like so corresponds to the property of this property of the U's, namely that the UN of a point of a Minkowski space, point x1, x2, is equal to U of minus that, the second point minus the first point. Yeah? So that one has to show. So the problem is, so one can also show that these Minkowski guys are Lorentz invariant under proper Lorentz transformation. So that comes from the general covariance of the theory as a special consequence. But really, I want to relate guys that are related to each other by the inversion map. Yeah, so x goes to minus x, and that is not a proper Lorentz transformation. So the trick is to deal with that is sort of the same problem that one encounters also in Minkowski spacetime. So the trick is now to show that my very complicated micro-local spectrum condition actually implies that these U's are boundary values of analytic functions. Yeah, so they're a very complicated domain, but they're boundary values of analytic functions that depend on complex arguments. Yeah. And moreover, one can show they're not only invariant under the real Lorentz group, but they're invariant under the complex Lorentz group. And the complex Lorentz group, however, contains this inversion map. And so that one can then use together with the old arguments by Jost, Sita, Weidman, all these clever mathematical physicists to show that the PCT invariance of my operator product expansion. So whoever is interested in the very complicated technical details can look up the paper. This is, I hope you got some very rough idea what this is all about. So my second last 15 minutes, I'm going to switch gears and talk about the renormalization group in my sort of in the framework that I'm proposing. So now, whereas before I was talking about a totally general property of a field theory, I never wrote down a Lagrangian, I never wrote down an action, I only assumed these general properties. Now I want to write down an action.
Before you leave the PC.
Yeah.
What are its consequences for field theory in GTR?
Well, I think that it doesn't matter whether you remember this discussion yesterday, whether you read the spacetime upside down or from top to bottom, it doesn't matter for the definition of the field theory.
So when we have a particle interpretation, there are things like particles and antiparticles at the same time.
Right. So if you specialize now to spacetimes with asymptotic region, I think you get a similar interpretation of this invariance as in Minkowski space. So an in wave packet, is mapped to the corresponding charge conjugate out wave packet. That would be. But I am not assuming any. I'm only proving really things about the operator product expansion. So that's a sort of a very local statement. That's one, but I believe the theorem is true in general. I just am not smart enough to prove it, or I don't have the right assumptions, so maybe it's wrong, who knows.
You say you assume you have an operator product expansion, and you prove that the coefficients have this invariance.
Yes.
That does not necessarily imply that the entire algebra has this isomorphism.
Right, because the operator product expansion is sort of an infinitesimal version of the relations in the algebra, unfortunately.
Right.
Yeah, it's not it's only a good expansion for arbitrarily small
regions. So in the case where one has asymptotic regions, is the operator product expansion enough to prove this property about?
No, it's not enough. No, it's not enough. No, that's certainly not enough.
But if you have extra assumptions of the global property of the coefficients of the operator product expansion, it should lift the.
Right, but I don't know how to justify this assumption. I think I can very well justify the assumption that I've made, but I Okay, one can always prove theorems, yeah? So one can put in lots of assumptions and prove one more epsilon from what one has put in. I claim this is not the case in what I'm doing here.
What's your argument about trying to prove the CBT theorem for the entire algebra, then? Trying to prove the existence of this?
Yeah, for the entire algebra. It's an open problem, so.
Is your suspicion that it requires further assumptions, or that it requires just a lot more technical work using the same kinds of assumptions?
I really have no opinion. I think it might, there might be some global obstruction. I'm not so sure. It could be. I don't know. But that would be interesting. It would be boring. The interesting case if it doesn't hold, but I don't see any reason why it shouldn't. But you know, I really can't answer this question. Sorry.
Could you say again what the microlocal spectral condition actually restricts?
It restricts the. So in quantum field theory, you have these singular expressions. You know, some power. Row, and then in Lorentzian space, this is really to be understood as the boundary value of something. Yes, so it's some I epsilon prescription, and it's kind of in some sense the I epsilon prescription is specified by this microlocal spectrum condition.
Does it restrict the algebra or the space time?
No, it restricts sort of the short distance behavior of the fields. Yeah, so it restricts how the sort of field products behave. The algebraic relations, so to speak, yeah? So if you view these C's as structure constants, then it's sort of a restriction on the algebraic relations. And sort of the nice thing about this momentum space formulation of the spectrum condition is that you really see that it really means sort of there are only positive momenta running in sort of the Feynman diagrams in some sense, yeah? So that's sort of maybe. Although I haven't written down an action and no Feynman rules, there's still Feynman diagrams.
Is free field theory PCT
invariant? Yeah, so I've checked these assumptions in perturbation theory. Yeah, so I know they're true in perturbation theory. And free field theory is a special case, obviously. But in the non-perturbative regime, I don't know. I have no idea. Okay, so now the renormalization group, I think, so now I'm going to focus on a model, and I'm going to work in perturbation theory, whereas before I've made general assumptions, model-independent assumptions, and which were not based on perturbation theory, but based on insights obtained from perturbation theory. And now I'm going to say what the renormalization group means in this general framework that I'm proposing. So I'm just, as a simple example, phi to the fourth theory, although it's not necessary just to deal with scalar fields. So classically, in Minkowski space-time, this theory trivially has an invariance under a rescaling of the inertial coordinates, a rescaling of the field strength, and that rescaling of the mass, and no scaling of the kappa. So that's, you can easily see that, it's trivial. Okay, so there is, although, however, a very non-trivial statement that a similar invariance also holds in the corresponding quantum field theory, at least in the sort of perturbative, in the perturbative constructions, in the sense that if I look at an endpoint correlation function, and I now scale the coordinates, or I could rescale the momenta if I were to work in propositions. Momentum space doesn't really matter. Then I'm supposed to get the same thing, provided I only multiply this complicated function by an overall factor, and I use different lambda-dependent coupling constants here. Yeah. So the surprise, though, is that the dependence is not that simple one in general, although in some cases it is, but you know, there's some exotic n equals 4 super Young-Mills theory or some something like that. But in general, it's a very complicated function of lambda, which one can determine in principle in perturbation theory to arbitrary order. Okay. So that was Minkowski space-time, so I want to present you with what is true in in curved space-time. So, well, when I have again my list of problems and how I'm going to solve all of them. So the problems are that obviously there aren't any global inertial coordinates, and if I just rescale some arbitrarily chosen coordinates, then I would certainly not expect any simple transformation behavior, and that everything would be pretty arbitrary, in fact. There's also no analog of the vacuum state, so which state should I use for my correlation functions? So there's an obvious solution to that, and which is sort of the relativist way of thinking, is that really you shouldn't change scale the coordinates, because that's kind of a really arbitrary way of doing things. But you should really rescale the distances, which is equivalent to just rescaling the metric. Yeah. So in a Minkowski space-time, this is really the same, because it so happens that this scale transformation is actually a conformal transformation with conformal factor, constant conformal factor lambda squared. But that's very special. Yeah. But in curved space-time, I just change the metric. And again, I won't use my correlation functions, because they depend on states, and I certainly don't expect any simple transformation behavior. But I really work directly with the interacting fields again. Yeah. So, but now they're the perturbatively constructed interacting fields. OK. So just two more transparencies, and you'll be. Okay, so indeed what I'm supposed to do is, before I had this totally abstract algebra, but now in perturbation theory, I can actually construct it. So I can construct the interacting fields, of course, as formal perturbation theories that which are not expected to converge, but nevertheless, I get an algebra of formal power series, which depends on the particular Lagrangian chosen. So that's why I put little l, and it obviously depends on the space-time metric and, of course, on the orientation, but I haven't written that. And so what one can prove after, you know, many, many pages of sort of an analysis of these, of the perturbation series that define the interacting fields, is that suppose I change the metric by this constant conformal factor, and I looked at the fields associated with that changed metric. And suppose I suitably change the coupling parameters in the Lagrangian, then the field, the algebra or the relations satisfied by the fields are the same ones as in the original unscaled space-time. Yeah? So there is, in other words, more formally, some isomorphism going from this algebra of fields to that algebra of fields with a rescaled metric and a suitably changed coupling parameters. And in fact, for example, the mass squared coupling parameter changes with this classical overall scaling. Then there's a one, which corresponds to the classical part, and then there are quantum corrections, and they take the form, their formal power series in the coupling. And at each finite order in perturbation theory, they're given by a polynomial in logarithm of lambda. Yeah? So some polynomial which one can determine if one likes calculating Feynman diagrams, for example. But the point is that there are always polynomials in log lambda to arbitrary order in perturbation theory. Right, so of course the full non-perturbative function m squared of lambda, which I have no idea how to calculate, would not simply, I mean, in the end there are infinitely many high powers of the logarithm, so I don't know how to sum them up.
Doing this for the point four theory?
Yeah, you can do it. You can also do it for non-renormalizable series. It doesn't matter.
So. Sure.
You can do it.
You better include all the couplings that are allowed.
Right, so there are more couplings coming here. So there's also, in curved space, you also have a coupling of the field to the curvature, which is usually denoted by xi, that's running, and the kappa will also run. Yeah. So in general, you know, you need not start with a renormalizable theory. You can do it for non-renormalizable series as well. OK, so the point is the action of my renormalization group isomorphism, so the map that identifies the series on the space-time with a different conformal factors just takes the following form. If I apply to some local field, OI, yeah, so I is again the label for the species, then you get in general a linear combination of other fields, so in particular the field itself, but also in general some other fields, which you could, I guess, call operating mixing or something. And so this field is up or associated with the original metric and original Lagrangian L, and these fields are associated with the rescaled metric and the sort of flowing Lagrangian L of lambda. And so the special thing about renormalizable theories, and as opposed to non-renormalizable ones, is that here, sort of, in the renormalizable one, this flow occurs in a finite dimensional space of field space. So there will appear only finitely many terms OJ in this series. Whereas in non-renormalizable theories, there will be will always be an infinite tower of fields appearing. Okay, and then why it's called a group, because this satisfies that group law. So that's why it's called a renormalization group, as opposed to the renormalization group map or whatever. Okay, so my conclusions. VCT in curved space-time is true in the sense that the field theory, or what I've shown really, the operator product expansion, is invariant under the time orientation goes to minus the time orientation. The orientation is the same. The renormalization group can be defined in terms of the behavior of the algebra under a rescaling of the metric with conformal factor. And my punchline is that one should go local and not consider, in at least as the conceptual issues are concerned, okay, rather than looking at global concepts. Thank you.
And in improving this, what regularization do you use?
For the perturbation theory? We use actually this method, this old method by Epstein and Glaser, which has the advantage that it's a position space based method. But it's not essential, really, what you
would. Very beautiful work of Concevich, you know.
Yeah, I think Concevich, though, has done. He came to Chicago to give a talk. I think he's done, though, quantum field theory in Euclidean curved space times. I think that was his. I'm not sure.
For this point.
It's irrelevant. That's true, yeah. So he, I don't.
In fact, I think you'd be filling. True.
No, I think dimensional regularization is a nice tool, and that works, right. Is a very nice way of doing things, and that works in the Euclidean. Well, the thing is, what you do is you expand the fields in terms of a Minkowski field plus a curvature times a first correction plus curvature squared times. So you expand the series, so to speak, in Minkowski fields, and you then renormalize the Minkowski fields by Minkowski methods, so to speak, very roughly speaking. Yeah, I have not had time, obviously. I mean, what you say is right. I think I also very much prefer sort of the dimensional, in as far as practical calculations are concerned, I view the dimensional regularization as superior, but I mean, that wasn't not really the point of my talk.
I missed the first 15 minutes of your talk, so you might have covered this. I'm sorry. So just for my education, so how do you, in this framework, think about cluster decomposition? When you don't have any NA diggers and...
Well, the states, is the cluster decomposition is the property of the states, yeah? So the state may look like, you ask whether the truncated or connected correlation functions vanish at infinity sufficiently fast. That may be true in some curved space times with a sort of nice drop of the metric. It may be totally wrong in other space times. It may be right for some states. It's certainly not right for all states. I don't know. I mean, it's just, it really depends.
But it is something very, very physical, right? I mean, you shake.
Sure, no doubt about it. Yeah. Yeah, I don't have nothing to say about that. Yeah, that's the answer to your question.
Question about the microlocal spectral condition. So, you phrased it, certainly it's a condition which is very, very useful for doing these perturbative renormalization techniques. And you phrased it in terms of Feynman diagrams.
Yeah.
All right. So, suppose you were trying somehow to formulate the essence of an algebraic quantum field theory at a non-perturbative level.
Right.
Would you expect that you need something stronger than the current microlocal spectral
condition? No, I think it's true. That's true.
That's sufficient. Yeah. Sort of non-perturbative corrections wouldn't modify that condition anyway.
I think so. I mean, it's hard to get hold of non-perturbative quantum field theory. So, I mean, of course, there exist very nice non-perturbative constructions, but they usually don't give enough information. Don't give the kind of information that I would like to have, like the correlation functions. You know, they don't usually. People determine all kinds of nice things, but not the kind of things that I would like to have.
For example, if you look for the moment at a flat space field theory and you look at instanton corrections to a correlation function, do they have the same kind of singularity structure that we're talking about?
I think they don't change the. What I'm talking about here is the short distance. I think I have a feeling that I wouldn't change that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Any other questions for Stefan?
You didn't emphasize locality very much, so could you allow for small deviations from locality and still have your theorems?
Okay, yeah, there are some Russian guys who have looked at sort of Minkowski space, sort of an axiomatic approach on Minkowski, which I don't understand very well, I have to say, where they have some sort of almost some concept of locality at large distances, sort of larger than 10 Planck length, you know, whatever. And a lot of things still seem to work. I mean, the PCT theorem seems to work. I don't know about the renormalization theory. If you say had a non-local Lagrangian, you would typically have this, which you get in this non-commutative field series, effectively, you have some. I think it very much depends on what exactly the non-locality of the Lagrangian is. I think the things you get from these non-commutative field series, I think everything is all right. But for a generic non-local Lagrangian, I think you cannot do the perturbation theory analysis, and you don't probably have a theory satisfying these fundamental properties. But I don't know. So this is my opinion, but not something I really looked at.
Well, you asked us at least from theory of four, but do you have any? Did you follow whether?
Yeah, no, I would love to be able to tell you. If I knew, I would sort of probably give a different talk. But I think, though, yeah, I don't know. I really, string theory is, of course, does not have really local fields. That's the whole trouble. And so but it might have something that's sort of close enough to that. I really can only speculate.
It looks a lot like string theory has some theory. Or string theory, so it has
CPT. Yeah, okay. So with regard to PCT, yeah. So I think you would address it probably via the S matrix in string theory. I think probably, I don't know, there are people here who know much more about string theory than I do, but I would certainly think that, you have some background space time and then you do. I think this algebraic approach is really very much geared to situations where you have local fields that really depend in this precise sense that I want to try to advertise only on the really local geometry near a point. And I think that is likely not, I don't know how that would generalize to quantum gravity. I have a feeling that it might, for all I know, but I certainly don't see how that.
On the level of perturbative string theory, I mean, one thing that we definitely don't know how to do is Minkowski and Wolfschmidt. M from the first principles. M,
but I don't think you need Minkowski-Rorschach in string theory.
No,
I don't think so.
CPD is sort of a trivial
idea. No, I'm not talking about CPD.
So in perturbation theory, there is just as a trivial, not very interesting result. My point is that you can show it non-perturbatively. I'm talking about the quantum field theory context. In string theory, I can't really. Probably must follow from the like corresponding property of the Lagrangian or something, I would think. But.
All right, well, let's thank Stefan again.